Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. So when Theresa May stood up at Tory conference and announced that austerity would soon be over, it led most front pages. But today at PMQs, the first since the recess, we are given a reminder of the problems with that catchphrase. Isabel, what are those?
Well, Jeremy Corbyn had a week to prepare a list of those problems. And what he did was he had his six questions all focused on different topics that showed that actually public services are struggling a great deal and that they could do with an end to austerity now. And could the Prime Minister say when austerity is going to be over for people with mental health problems, for the police, for local government and so on. And he was quite effective, actually. His questions were quite long, but they were focused. And he would retort to Theresa May's answer first by saying, well, actually, no, you talk about parity of esteem, but it was Labour that ensured that a commitment to parity of esteem between mental and physical health was on the front page of the Health and Social Care Act, and then he'd move on to another topic. And by contrast, I thought Theresa May was quite lacking in confidence today. It's almost as though she hadn't had that much time or sort of mental energy to prepare for PMQs because she's been so busy with Brexit Hell Week.
And James, Theresa May did, in response to Jeremy Corbyn repeatedly asking her whether austerity was really over or would ever be over under a Tory government, basically add something to her catchphrase, didn't she?
Should I say austerity's over, but fiscal responsibility is not? Now, this is not the most catchiest.
Can't right, see it on
but,
every poster.
But
in
I think
country.
It's not the problem, which is that paragraph in the conference speech, number 10, pointing to this stuff, but it also contains a pledge to keep debt falling as a percentage of GDP. But the problem with saying, when you, especially when you talk to people who don't work in SW1, when you say austerity is over, people think that A, the spending taps are coming on. They also wonder if the previous cuts are going to be reversed. When actually what she means is we now can spend money as governments would normally, which is a different thing. I think the public hear one thing, and I think that the danger the Tories have is they get themselves into the position they got themselves in the 2017 election, when they want to kind of get away from the austerity narrative, which is politically understandable, but they don't put anything in its place. So Jeremy Corbyn just pops up saying, let's give everyone a free puppy and all this, and people say, oh yeah, why not? And the problem is that, and the Tories don't have an intellectual frame to counter it because they've abandoned austerity and haven't put anything else in its place.
Isabel, is this the problem? I mean, lots of people said it, that Theresa May's Conservative Party appears to be Labour-lite. It was Miliband-lite. It now looks a bit Corbyn-lite. Is this what happens when you do that?
Yes, I think it does sort of suggest that you actually, if you want all these things, you might as well go full fat and vote Labour as opposed to the sort of Diet Coke version of it that Theresa May's offering. But there's another problem, which is that the Tories have been in government for long enough for there to be competence problems that can be raised at Prime Minister's questions as well. So universal credit, for instance, which was raised by Caroline Flint from the back benches. Ian Blackford talked about the work capability assessment, which is a fitness for work test for benefits. And all of these things have been bubbling away as problems for a very long time. So it's not just about the sort of spending pledges. It's actually about the government's ability to do these things. And when you've been a party in opposition for a very long time, and when you've got a new leader, you can start to sound as though you might actually be able to do things better. And it's extraordinary that Jeremy Corbyn would even be able to make this claim without everyone laughing him down the street. But he did have such a long list of problems with what the government's doing and how it's implementing it, that the tables of credibility, if there's such a thing, might be starting to turn.
Now, Brexit didn't really come up as much as it has done in recent PMQs, but yesterday Dominic Raab addressed the chamber and he had to give an update on Salzburg, which it's fair to say didn't go particularly well for the government, and what's happened since there in the negotiations. There are lots of tricky questions from Tory Brexiteers for the Brexit secretary, but the most striking was Nigel Dodds, the DUP Westminster leader, who basically warned the government not to make the mistakes they did in December when they tried to bounce the DUP into position. Now, we've had a development on that this afternoon, which is that the DUP, it's said, could now be planning to vote down the budget when it comes next month if they think that Theresa May has breached their red lines on Brexit. James, how worried should Theresa May be?
So, behind the scenes, the DUP have been going to cabinet ministers and saying, look, I know officials are saying to you, the DUP are never going to risk putting Jeremy Corbyn, who believes in United Ireland and was deeply sympathetic to the IRA, in number 10. But we really would risk that if that was the way to avoid new barriers being created between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And the DUP are trying to say, look, we really are serious about this threat. I think the big question is, the kind of key bit of the backstop is going to be that the UK essentially stays in the customs union. And then how far can you de-dramatise these other checks and suggest that they're just an intensification of pre-existing checks so that the DUP can say, well, we've stood strong for Northern Ireland and we've won, which will be politically tempting for them. But I think this is a very, very high-stakes game because, you know, the union to them is more fundamental than any deal. And also, I think it is worth remembering that the DUP do not have the same view of a Good Friday Agreement as most people in Westminster do. You know, if you tell them, oh my word, no deal would endanger the Good Friday Agreement, they wouldn't think that was the catastrophic thing that lots of people here would think. It's also worth remembering, to point out the Karen Bradley point, that unionist parties compete with unionist parties in Northern Ireland. And if it looks like the DUP have not, you know, stood strong for Northern Ireland, you'll find the UUP outflanking them round the other side.
Yeah, Isabel, do you think, I mean, there's been some chatter in Westminster that actually Theresa May can call the DUP's bluff. Do you think that would be a good idea?
No, and the DUP have been making quite clear this week that they don't want to be bounced into anything like they were at the end of last year. And they were quite quiet during Tory conference, but they've been making an increasing number of interventions. Arlene Foster was making clear yesterday, for instance, that the DUP aren't wavering on their red line for regulatory checks at the border, which shows that they're not in a mood to help the Prime Minister out. And why would they give that impression at this stage anyway, given that the proposals are still being presented and negotiated on?
Now, the other big story of the day relates to sheep. And this relates to a Times story on Whitehall plans for slaughter of sheep after no-deal Brexit. This is the idea that plans are being discussed by Whitehall officials that should ports be closed in the event of a no-deal Brexit, it might mean that there has to be a mass sheep cull. James, do you think this is what the piece of information that is needed to whip these ERG members into shape and get them to back Theresa May in order to save the sheep?
I think this actually highlights one of the interesting debates, even among cabinet ministers, about what would happen in no-deal. So some people think, look, come on, pragmatism would take hold. There is no way that they're going to stop British planes from landing in Europe. It would be devastating for the Spanish tourist industry. Or there's no way the French are going to stop it, turn the Eurostar back halfway down the tunnel. And therefore, you know, the sheep would carry on crossing the border. Don't believe any of this stuff, right? That's one. Some cabinet ministers basically take the view that pragmatism are out. Others take the view that the EU...
And mutton stew.
Indeed. That the EU would want to kind of create a demonstration effect. You know, this is the chaos that follows leaving the EU without a deal, you know. And therefore, you would find the EU behaving in an incredibly unreasonable manner. I mean, you saw this, interestingly, this tension in Dominic Raab's own conference speech when he kind of ridiculed some of the no-deal predictions, some of which had come out of a government in which he is a cabinet minister. So I think there is that tension there. And it's also this, which is, it kind of comes down to another point that someone in cabinet said to me, which is, do you really think we're going to have worse relations with the EU the day after Brexit than we currently have with Russia? Because there are direct flights from London to Moscow every day. Is that really going to be the case? And I think this is the big unknown about no deal, which is, you know, on a way, I think from the government point of government contingency planning, you have to imagine, because the EU have been prepared to do so at various other points in negotiation, that they would be prepared to prove a political point. And so you could end up with, you know, thousands of sheep stuck on the motorway.
Now, as you point out, James, this is just one of many no-deal notices that we have had, and some are official, some are unofficial. There are unofficial reports that no-deal could bring about super gonorrhea. Isabel, any that particularly strike you, and do you think in general the public are taking these things seriously, or has it all got slightly comedy?
I think the range of warnings about things that are going to stop has got so great that it's become a bit like the, you know, the joke about the Daily Mail's list of things that give you cancer, which basically means you can't eat anything or do anything. And I wonder whether actually, if we did have a no deal, there would still be surprise at what did happen, because people have just screened out every single warning thinking this is all ludicrous. And if there were some kind of chaos, it would still come as a shock. I think my favourite one, super gonorrhea aside, which really was a real treat, was the idea that it was going to stop pets from travelling. It's not just going to be freedom of movement of people, but it's also going to be freedom of movement of cats.
And bad news for Bertie.
Who sometimes sits in on this podcast.
I mean, I think that actually Isabel's example of a cancer in the Daily Mail is perfect, because actually lots of things do give you cancer. I think, my science is going to go wrong at some point. Doesn't almost everything give you cancer?
Apparently.
Yes. So, no, but like, seriously, everything gives you cancer. In the...
And welcome to our cheery podcast.
No, but subscribe. But this is where Isabel is right, which
in
is
the end, you obviously dead.
In the end you are going to die, right? And so therefore this is a kind of similarity. But my favourite no deal is actually a kind of hopeful, the kind of sensible, something we haven't had enough of from the government, sensible mitigation planning. The Scottish Secretary, David Mundell, says that he's talked to his Uruguayan counterparts and he can source fresh avocados from Uruguay if imports from the continent are shut off.
So millennials can relax, thank God.
Even though they are definitely going to die, as James has pointed out. So thank you for joining us and do join us again tomorrow. And if you like this podcast, please do remember to subscribe. And if you really like it, do remember to rate on the iTunes store.